us. Professor, many would assume that climate plays quite a significant role when it comes to tsunamis. Could you talk us through this, about how climate change is perhaps not a major factor here?
Yes, I'd love to do that. So let's first look at what causes tsunamis, and that might give us some insight. So tsunamis are the result of an earthquake, and that earthquake happens exactly as it sounds, in the earth, and it's a quake, it's a shake. So what we have is normally about 10 or 50 kilometers below the surface, there'll be a shifting of the tectonic plates, there'll be a crack, there'll be a fissure, there'll be some movement of the plates, which causes a vibration and shakes the earth above it, and that is an earthquake. And the earth actually moves. And because buildings can only withstand a certain amount of movement and bridges can only stand a certain amount of movement, there's a lot of damage that can happen. And this happens especially along the edges of the continental plates, which are spread around the world, and a very, very high proportion of them, of these earthquakes and volcanoes happen near Japan on that sort of oceanic ridge that they've got there. And it's called the Ring of Fire because the earthquakes and volcanoes are linked, and these happen at weaknesses in the continental plates, and normally the edges of the continental plates or the very middles where there might be a crack or a fissure like the Rift Valley. So these earthquakes, which happen under the earth, then set up a vibration, and that vibration, when it's transmitted to the ocean, to the water, when that water starts to move, it forms a wave. And that wave then travels. It's a massive wave. It's got an amplitude, which is, means a height of up to 20 meters. And that wave travels across the ocean. And when it comes to a shoreline, that wave then sucks the water out ahead of it. And then the water recedes at that coastline and then forms a huge wave and then comes crashing down. And that water now can spread very far inland. And that's called a tsunami, or we used to call it a tidal wave. And that causes a lot of damage and can cause deaths. Now, while I was talking, not once did I mention the three components of the climate. And the three components of the climate are the oceans, the air, and the sun. And what happens when those interact? We get heat, and that heat moves around the atmosphere and causes the weather or the climate as we know it. And climate change is the result of the increase in the temperature of the atmosphere because of increasing solar radiation that's being retained by the planet. Now, you'll see there are three different things when it comes to the climate. There's the ocean, there's the atmosphere, and there's the sun. None of those have got anything to do with the cause of tsunamis, which we discovered and which we said was an earthquake. So earthquakes are very, very different to anything to do with the climate. There's never been a record or any thought, any scientific evidence that a change in climate will cause more earthquakes or will cause bigger or more powerful earthquakes. They don't seem to be connected at all, because an earthquake comes from interactions in the crust beneath the surface of the earth. And beneath the surface of the earth, there is no climate. There is no weather. Weather is limited to those 20 kilometers above the surface of the planet. And that's where our weather happens. So quite simply, tsunamis have got nothing to do with climate. But tsunamis are another environmental hazard which we have to face.
So environmental hazard, Professor, this latest one classified as the sixth worst of its kind. And in that region, as you mentioned, the Ring of Fire. And it's not the first time this area has been impacted by these dramatic earthquakes and then producing this ripple effect of tsunami waves after waves. So what essentially caused the latest one?
Well, there was an earthquake, as we know, in the ocean off Japan's coastline. Why this earthquake was so powerful, we don't know. I mean, it was 8.8 on the Richter scale, and if that happened in Cape Town, for example, the whole city would be destroyed. So it depends how far away you are. And we do find that earthquakes of this nature are generally quite deep underground. And by the time they reach a city or a town, and this one was under the ocean, you must remember that, by the time they reach a city or town, they might have dwindled a bit. But there's no real indication why earthquakes are getting more powerful. But we can also show, or we can definitely show, that earthquakes are impacting on more people because of population pressure. We see more people living in the cities. The cities are becoming taller, if you like, because of the skyscrapers and the blocks of flats that are being built, and they become more susceptible to earthquakes. Now, in very sophisticated and wealthy countries, like, for example, California and Japan, they have very, very strict earthquake prevention building codes. So the buildings are designed to be able to withstand earthquakes. And we know that in California, along the San Andreas Fault, there are going to be more earthquakes. And there's a big earthquake that's due any time there. But we, the scientists, really don't know when, but they're monitoring it. And if you are living in California, especially near LA, there are earthquakes every single day. Every single day there's an earthquake, but they're very, very small. And some scientists are saying they're building up for the really big one. And that is going to cause damage. It might not cause huge loss of life, but it's going to cause massive infrastructural damage because of the existing infrastructure there. If an earthquake happens in Turkey, for example, which is also very common, where there aren't many building codes and the structures there are quite susceptible, especially in the rural areas, roads are damaged, bridges are damaged, houses are damaged, and people are stranded. And that causes massive human suffering. So I can't say why this earthquake is so powerful, but we can say why it's likely to impact so many people. The story about the way the impact of the earthquake is now, or the warnings are now dwindling, is because when an earthquake happens, the wave spreads around 360 degrees. So it goes all over the whole earth. But some natural qualities of the ocean floor, of the land masses and so on, will reduce the impact of the tsunami. So we can't always say where the tsunami is going to happen. So you put out warnings for everywhere, and then you monitor it. And that's why the warnings for some of those places have been reduced. Other places not, but some have definitely been reduced because we watch the wave. You can see the wave. Satellite altimetry, it's called, measures the height of the ocean and can detect the height of the wave. You can see where it's moving. And just like we can monitor hurricanes and see where they're going. And then you can reduce or increase your warning levels.
Mm. One of our listeners via the WhatsApp line just sends us this now, 2116, asking, what about ocean fracking? Could this also be causing tsunamis?
So ocean fracking, I don't really understand. Fracking itself happens inland, under the surface, where you inject a water into the surface of the earth to try and break up some shale to release the oil. Now, that in itself is a small earthquake. It does happen, but tests are done. And the fact that that shale is still sitting there containing the oil indicates that that geology is very, very stable. If it was unstable, there would have been cracks already and that oil would have leaked out. So the fact that the oil has managed to actually form means it's been there for millions of years, which normally is in a very, very stable place. So you'll find fracking occurring in stable geologies, and it's unlikely that fracking itself would lead to an earthquake of that nature. It does cause minor tremors, but those tremors would be what you would have in Joburg every day due to mining activities. Wouldn't be anything serious. I'm not saying that fracking is a good idea because there are lots of other problems, but earthquake damage from fracking is unlikely. Now, ocean fracking, I imagine, would be when they would pour into the ocean surface itself, the bottom of the ocean, which is very, very tricky, and they do look for oil there. But I don't know if they do fracking, because doing explosions under the ocean would be very tricky to control. But I imagine it could be done. But generally speaking, they just do drilling into the ocean floor, and they find a core of oil, and then they would pump it out. I'm not sure if they do fracking under the ocean itself, but they certainly do it on the land. And they're talking about doing it in the Karoo, for example, but they do it all over America, Central America, where they've got oil in the rocks there.
In conclusion, Professor, we've got about 2 minutes. You mentioned this latest earthquake measuring 8.8 on the Richter scale, which is devastating. The most devastating one in recent times, 2004, that earthquake causing the ripple effect of tsunamis, I believe that was over 9 on the Richter scale. Now we've seen millions of people have been evacuated, but not the extent of damage that was perhaps anticipated, or were sufficient contingencies put in place. And now we're seeing the downgrading of warnings, etc.
Yes, you know, it's always a good idea to evacuate people. And you must remember the Richter scale is measured at the place, at the source of the earthquake. So that is always that's indicative of the power of the earthquake, but it's very important to realize that people are living in the places that might be affected by the tsunami are not being affected by the earthquake as such. So if you're in Russia and there's an earthquake happening on land, the towns and cities near to that earthquake will definitely be affected. If the earthquake happens under the ocean, then it's the tsunami, it's the water that is going to cause the damage, not an earthquake. Mm. So the buildings aren't going to shake and fall over, but the water is now going to rush in, and anything under maybe 10 or 20 meters above sea level is going to be flooded. So you evacuate the people so that lives are not endangered, but the infrastructure is not going to be able to cope. I mean, you can't have 20 meters or 10 meters of water flooding the center of Cape Town and expect that water just to drain away. Where's it going to go? It can't go back to the sea because the sea is the sea. So we have to prepare and evacuate people. That's the important thing, because you really don't want people to die. But we'll have to investigate and see what the height of the waves are when they've arrived. I'm sure they've arrived in some places, and we'll be able to determine what kind of damage there is. It's very different to rainfall flooding. Firstly, because the rainfall flooding can drain off to the sea. The seawater can't drain anywhere unless it goes back into the sea, and you've got to wait then for the water to subside. And also, salt water is much more dangerous than fresh water, even though floods are not really fresh water. They're a mixture of sand and silt and so on. But salt water is highly corrosive, and so it damages electrical infrastructure, and it damages steel and concrete and things like that. So there are differences, and there are certainly more risks associated with sea flooding than there are associated with just regular water flooding from rainfall. So hopefully people won't be dying, and hopefully there'll not be too infrastructure damage, but it is something we need to be aware of.
Indeed. Professor Peter Johnson, climate expert from UCT, thanks so much for your time on the show.